Sifi von Sof 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 Chanukah Uchag Tov Chanukah Uchag Tov Sifi von Sof 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 Chag Simcha Ula'am Nes Gadol Haya Sham Nes Gadol Haya Sham Chag Simcha Ula'am Sifi von Sof 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 Chanukah Uchag Tov Chanukah Uchag Tov Sifi von Sof 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 Chag Simcha Ula'am Nes Gadol Haya Sham Nes Gadol Haya Sham סביבון, סוף סוף סוף, חנוכה הוא חג טוב, חנוכה הוא חג טוב, סביבון, סוף סוף סוף, חג שמחה הוא לעם, נס גדול היה שם, נס גדול היה שם, חג שמחה הוא לעם, סביבון, סוף סוף סוף, חנוכה הוא חג טוב, חנוכה הוא חג טוב, סביבון, סוף סוף סוף, חג שמחה הוא לעם, נס גדול היה שם, נס גדול היה
Welcome to Festival of Light, a celebration of Hanukkah. For the next hour, we'll share some traditional and contemporary stories and throw in some music as well, all in commemoration of this 8-day Jewish holiday celebrating the enduring spirit of hope. Our first story is written by Alan McGill and was published on the website Chabad.org. The story is titled One More Light. I had a choice to make, either drive the 90 miles to see my family, or go look for an extra bulb. My workday was over, and I certainly wasn't looking for more work. Now ought to be my time off, when I could drive from the New York City Hospital and Rehabilitation Center where I worked as a recreation therapist, to the warmth of loved ones in my home city of Philadelphia. Go home, Alan, a voice was telling me. You've done enough. But there was something wrong in what I was seeing, in what I had been seeing for the last number of days. There was something wrong in what I was seeing in front of me. That something wrong was an electric menorah with an orange glowing shamash bulb and seven other bulbs radiating with light. For the first 7 days of Hanukkah, before leaving late in the afternoon, I would turn the bulbs so that they would glow, adding one more each day. It was the least I could do. In this hospital, which was ostensibly a nursing home, there were about 1,000 residents, of which around 10% were Jewish. Walking through this hospital, which was about a city block long, it seemed there were at least a couple of dozen, maybe more, brightly decorated trees and other ornaments for the December 25th event. But for the 100 Jews or so, the only recognition of the holiday of Hanukkah was this one small electric menorah, which was in the recreation room on the first floor, at the extreme right end of the building. There would be no lighting with oil or candles, because that was deemed a fire violation. This is why it became so important to me that these menorah lights should shine bright, and that the residents, all too many of whom had dementia or other age-related memory impairments, would have a visual cue that this holiday of religious self-expression and joy was upon them. Thankfully, I was able to organize a Hanukkah party, but that was only for an hour or two, and the whole holiday is around 192 hours long. My menorah lighting worked like a charm until the aforementioned night when I was planning to drive to Philadelphia. I turned all the bulbs on, and when I get to the yet-to-be-used eighth one, it gave off no light. My rational side told me that a shamash and seven lit bulbs was good enough. But there was another side of me that was saying that so much has been taken away from these people with this meager acknowledgement of Hanukkah, and that so much has been taken away from them by their loss of memory, that I wanted them to have the correct number of lit bulbs. They deserved at least that much. So I took the long walk down the hallway to the main exit, and I made my way into the cold, dark night, hoping to find somehow, some way, one electric bulb that would work for this menorah. As I opened my car door, some doubt began to creep in. What if you don't find the bulb? Would all this effort have been worth it? I put those thoughts aside, and as I pulled out of the hospital parking lot, I made my plan. I would drive about a mile and a half to an avenue with a lot of commercial establishments, and I would look for a hardware store. About 10 minutes later, I found such a store, but they didn't have that bulb. I asked if they knew of another place. The sales clerk said no. I rationalized that I had made an effort, that there was nothing more to be done. I rationalized that I had made an effort and that it was time to head for Philadelphia. But then I had a thought. There's an Orthodox synagogue about 5 blocks away. Maybe they would have that bulb. So I drove there, knowing that the prayer service was already finished and that there might not be anyone still in the building. As I pulled up to the synagogue, I saw the 10 to 12 men who had been there for afternoon prayers, most of them retired gentlemen, and they were filing out of the synagogue. I certainly wasn't going to ask them to go back in on such a cold night and look for a bulb. My only hope was that there was still someone inside the synagogue. I parked and came to the door. If it were locked, that would be it, because everything has its limits. I was very grateful when the door opened. Although most of the lights were out, there was still one light left on the entrance hallway and one light in the sanctuary. "Hello," I said. "Anybody here?" A few moments later, the sanctuary light went out and the door opened, and Morris Gallant, a man I'd say who was in his mid-70s, came out and walked toward me. "Happy Hanukkah, Mr. Gallant," I said, shaking his hand. "Happy Hanukkah, Alan," he replied. "What brings you here? The service is already over." "I know that," I replied. Then I explained about the bulb I was looking for. He laughed and said, "We don't use electric menorahs. We use oil." "Okay," I replied. It was worth a shot. As I walked to the door, to the exit, I thought of all the time I had wasted in this unsuccessful venture. I could have been at the Verrazano Bridge by now, I thought. I opened the door and felt the cold air of the dark night upon me. Then I heard Mr. Gallant's voice. "Wait a minute," he said. There was something hopeful in his tone. "I think we might have had an electric menorah here about 20 years ago." "Really?" I said, coming back into the synagogue. "We may have stored it downstairs," he said. Before I could say another word, he went and found a flashlight and handed it to me. "Shine that as I walk down these steps." I was happy to help, but I didn't see any steps. To my surprise, Mr. Gallant then opened a trap door in the floor and began to gingerly walk down steps that appeared more like the rungs of a ladder. I guided him to the best of my ability with the light from that flashlight. I heard him moving around down there, but couldn't see him anymore, and I hoped that the light I was sending down there was helping him somehow. I heard boxes being moved around, and then a voice. "I don't see it." I encouraged him to come up, but he would have none of it. And at that moment, I realized how beautiful it was, what he was doing. And that something good had to come out of this, even if we didn't find the bulbs. Just that he would make such an effort for people he'd never met warmed my heart. Looking for light and wanting light and not giving in to the darkness is a victory in and of itself. Then I heard his triumphant words. "I found it, the menorah." Even if the Maccabees had not found that pure cruse of oil, the fact that they were looking for it in a desecrated temple was an act of faith. The sound of a box being opened, the sound of him moving things around in a box, thankfully gave way to him saying, "I found the bulbs." In a few moments, he was on his way back up. He was holding an old brown paper bag, and there was a look of joy on his face that comes when a person knows they beat the odds to accomplish something. However, he was very realistic. "There are 9 bulbs in here," he said. "I don't know if any of them work. They've been in here for 20 years. You can have them. We don't need them anymore." I thanked him profusely, so much, in fact, that he told me to go already and see if any of the bulbs still functioned. On the ride back to the hospital, I thought of how wonderful it would be to see all the bulbs lit. I got to the parking lot and then walked at a brisk pace to the main entrance. The guard there was surprised to see me at such a late hour. I walked that half block down to the recreation room. As I entered and looked at that one unlit bulb, I had a strong hope that a little more light would soon be brought to that room. I approached the electric menorah and unscrewed the malfunctioning bulb. I reached into the bag and took out the first bulb and began screwing it into that 8th slot. There's a certain point in turning it where you know that if it hasn't lit, it's not going to light. I had gone beyond that point, and I had twisted it in so tight that I wondered if I could get it out. But get it out I did, and I knew it was one bulb down and eight more to go. I repeated this procedure with the next bulb. It too gave off no light. Then the third bulb and the fourth bulb with the same lack of results. I was telling myself not to let this disappoint me. I had done all I could reasonably do. Next came the fifth bulb, then the sixth and the seventh. No illumination from any of them. The eighth bulb also did not work. There was only one more bulb, and it all came down to this last bulb. Realistically, I knew that the chances were incredibly slim for this bulb to work while the others had not. But I could not let go of that hope. I would not let go of that hope. And maybe, just maybe, this one would glow. I didn't want to prolong the anticipation any more, so I took the remaining bulb and started to screw it in. I never got a chance to tighten it, because halfway through turning it, a bright orange light emanated from its center. It had worked! Sitting unused for so many years, it was now bringing more light into the world. I was filled with such a joy that I just stared at it and smiled. For how long? I do not know. In my heart, I thanked God and I thanked Mr. Gallant, and I was so happy for the residents of the hospital that they would have a menorah that signified the correct day. The ride home to Philadelphia that night was very sweet. Now, enjoy Dave Koz and Friends performing Eight Candles, A Song for Hanukkah. Next, we'll hear a beautiful classic entitled Ma aus Tur, or Rock of Ages. Written in the 13th century, this classic hymn retells Jewish history in poetic form and celebrates deliverance from four ancient enemies like Pharaoh and Nebuchadnezzar. And now let's take a listen to Hadassah Byrne performing Ma aus Tur. Piece was written by Gita Steinberg in 2015. It's entitled My First Hanukkah in Communist Russia. I was born in Communist Russia to parents who were Holocaust survivors. We knew that we were Jewish. It was written in our identity cards, and we had Jewish names. But apart from that, I had no idea what Judaism was all about. I was the third generation to be disconnected from Judaism. I grew up amongst non-Jews, but I always felt out of place, like a black sheep. As far back as I can remember, I had a strange feeling that I could not identify. I felt like a plucked leaf flying in the wind without a home. I was restless, and I didn't feel at home anywhere. I thought that maybe it was because of my family's wanderings. They were penniless refugees. But the lack that I felt was not material. It was deeper. It was in my soul. I felt abandoned. One bright day, I heard for the first time that there is a country called Israel, whose residents are all Jews. Somehow, my soul heard that there is a place in the world where I belong. At that moment, it was absolutely clear to me that my place is there because I am a Jewess. I had no doubt that my home was in Israel, even though I had no idea how or what to expect on the way or what was waiting for me there. This discovery changed my life, granting it a purpose and a meaning. It was clear to me that whatever price I would have to pay to get there would be worthwhile, for what is truly precious always requires effort. I was possessed by this goal, to be a Jew and to live as a Jew, and I pursued it relentlessly for the 12 years that it took until I received permission to leave the prison of Soviet Russia. During those years, I suffered greatly. The Soviet authorities branded me a traitor for wanting to leave Russia, and they put every possible obstacle in my way. I was threatened, interrogated, and my house was searched. I lost my citizenship and my rights as a citizen. Ironically, I was no longer a Russian citizen, but I was unable to leave Russia. Worse than that, my family also rejected me. How could you leave your parents, they told me. None of this lessened my fervor to pursue my goal. On the contrary, as the pressure and persecutions increased, I became stronger and more sure of myself. My soul awoke and began to demand its food, a connection with its creator. I tried very hard to find every opportunity to learn about Judaism, paying dearly for every drop of information. I traveled to the larger cities, searching for underground Jews, and I found them. I was given a suitcase with illegal booklets that described Judaism. These were papers that were secretly typed with 5 copies using carbon paper. I read them thirstily, and I gathered a few like-minded Jews in my city to share the information with. When I learned about the story of Hanukkah, about the Maccabees and Hasmoneans, with a small picture of a menorah, I felt that this belonged directly to Russian Jews, to the struggle for the right to be a Jew and to remain a Jew in every place, in every generation. I decided that I must get a menorah and light it and share it with the members of my group. I made a simple sketch based on the picture in the story and what I imagined. One of the members of our group was a machine engineer, and I asked him if he could make such a thing out of metal. He agreed, even though he had to work at great risk at night when no one would see or ask any questions. That's true Jewish heroism. When it was finished, I was very excited. He made it in one piece. It was very heavy, but to me, it was beautiful. I lived in an 8-story building for young people. I had to wait years for government housing, and I had received a small room on the 8th floor in an apartment for 8 families with only one kitchen for all of us and a joint bathroom. It was opposite a building materials factory. The building was at the edge of the city, and all my friends lived at the other end of town. When Hanukkah arrived, it was the end of December. It was freezing cold, minus 30 degrees, and snowing heavily. On the appointed day, I invited my friends and prepared to share the story of Hanukkah and serve some light refreshments. Night came. I waited and I waited, but no one arrived. The storm was raging outside. When I realized that there's no point in waiting any longer, I put the menorah on the windowsill and I lit a candle. My first Hanukkah candle. I sat in front of the small flame, watching the reflection in the black window. I began to ask myself, what's this candle doing? Who sees it? The factory across the way? To whom am I publicizing the miracle? There isn't a living soul outside. And if someone does go by down there, he won't pick up his head. Even if he does lift his head, he will not see this little candle. So what am I doing here? I've been sitting in this prison for over 10 years, without family and without children. Will I ever leave this prison and live a normal life? I was disappointed that after all my efforts to prepare for this night, none of my friends had turned up. Feeling very sorry for myself, tears began to drip down my face. I didn't know how to pray, but I did know how to cry, and I continued crying throughout the night. That was my first Hanukkah candle. That small candle was not lit in vain. Someone did see it, the one who created me, a Jew, and who guides my life still. He wanted me to light a candle, to exert myself, and he freed me in the end from that huge prison called Communist Russia. God brought me to Israel. I kissed the land and merited going to Jerusalem and to the Kotel, the Western Wall. Slowly, I learned more about Judaism and became a fully observant Jew. Over the course of 10 years, drastic changes took place in Russia with the fall of the Soviet Union. I was sent back to Moscow to be the principal and teacher of Jewish studies in a Jewish school that had opened there very close to the Kremlin. The school was called Migdal Or, which means a lighthouse. My small Hanukkah candle ended up lighting many more candles, eventually turning into a huge light, a veritable lighthouse. Additional lights came from the thousands of Shabbat candles that I give out every Friday in the mall near my house. More light shines from the Torah classes that I am privileged to teach, and my learning partners throughout Israel, and from my poems and my stories of my personal miracles that accompanied me throughout my life. And to think all of this began from one forlorn Hanukkah candle that no one but the Almighty saw. That was Hanarat Hallelu, performed by Robin Spielberg, off her album An American Hanukkah Solo Piano. The Hanorat Hallelu is a traditional prayer. It's customary to recite it or sing it after the lights are kindled on the menorah. The lyrics in this prayer reinforce the idea that it is the sole intent in kindling the Hanukkah lights to publicize the miracle, and it is forbidden to use the light in any other way like work or study the Talmud. Next up, something completely different. It's the song Miracle of Light, performed by the band Eighth Day. Eighth Day was started by two brothers. They grew up in a very musical, Jewish Orthodox home in Southern California. What started as a fun family project for these Marcus brothers has grown into a global phenomenon. Here's Miracle of Light by Eighth Day.
No fighter plane, no battleship can crush with pure and sweet. It's that last drop of oil, it just won't see defeat. It keeps our little hopping flame and dancing to the beat. It's that last drop of oil we'll take it to the street. And we'll blow smoke in the face of darkness, set fires to burn up the night. Tell and retell all your stories, be a miracle of light. Blow smoke in the face of darkness, set fires to burn up the night. Tell and retell all your stories, be a miracle of light. Canto estino, no canto nismo son. I boi mi ad haloshim, rabi mi ad mi ad. I'll be a nest nest, I'll be a bright light. I'll be a miracle, I'll be a miracle of light. I'll be a nest nest, I'll be a bright light. I'll be a miracle, I'll be a miracle of light.
Crushed like an olive, let your oil flow. When there's nothing left, your true colors show. So reach deep down and grab that spark. Ain't you tired of living in the dark? Show me a candle, I show you the light. Show me a candle, I show you the
and
light.
We'll blow smoke in the face of darkness, set fires to burn up the night. Tell and retell all your stories, be a miracle of light. Blow smoke in the face of darkness, set fires to burn up the night. Tell and retell all your stories, be a miracle of light. Canto destino, canto nismo son. Iboiri miyad chaloshim, rabi miyad miyad. I'll be a nes nes, I'll be a bright light. I'll be a miracle, I'll be a miracle of light. I'll be a nes nes, I'll be a bright light. I'll be a miracle, I'll be a miracle of light. I'll be a nes, I'll be a nes.
We have an essay written in 2017 by Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg. It's entitled Hanukkah, Seeing Beyond the Surface. Why is Hanukkah called the holiday of vision? A husband and wife are getting ready to go to sleep. The wife is ready to close her eyes, but her husband is standing and staring at himself in a full-length mirror. "What's the matter with you?" she says. "Come to sleep already." He turns to her and says, "I am so depressed. All I see is a receding hairline, a growing gut, and wrinkles under my eyes. What hair I have left is gray. Tell me something positive, something uplifting, so I can go to sleep." The wife thinks for a moment and she says, Well, the good news is that your vision is still 20/20. There's a very strong association between Hanukkah and the sense of sight, of seeing. Every night we sing each night of Hanukkah. These candles are sacred. We don't have permission to benefit from their light, but their purpose is simply to be looked at. Moreover, we have a unique law on Hanukkah. The Talmud tells us, and the Shulchan Aruch records, one who can't light for himself or herself and sees the candles of someone else nevertheless makes the second blessing of who has wrought miracles for our forefathers. When I see someone put on a tefillin, take a lulav, or blow shofar, I don't make a blessing. Only on Hanukkah do I make a blessing when seeing someone else do the mitzvah. Why? Hanukkah is the holiday of seeing. The different Jewish holidays correspond with our different senses. On Purim, our hearing is heightened as we listen to the Megillah. On Pesach, our sense of taste is sharpened when we eat matzah and marar. On Hanukkah, we evaluate our sense of sight, testing how well we see. Eyes are a liability. What kind of seeing are we honing? It's not our physical sense of sight. Indeed, in a sort of paradoxical way, our eyes are a liability. We often feel that seeing is believing. If I can perceive and observe it, it must be true. If I can't, it is not real. Following this rule, we run the risk of dismissing and disregarding the most precious truths and realities in our lives. There are ideas, feelings, thoughts, and dreams that are authentic and genuine, despite the fact that they cannot be seen or observed. Our rabbis describe the Greek Empire and Hellenist influence as darkness. In expounding on the opening verses of the creation story, the Midrash Rabbah says, "Darkness was on the face of the deep." This refers to the Greek exile. Moreover, our rabbis taught that darkening our eyes was the goal of the Greek oppressors. Seeing beyond the surface. What is the difference between a room that is filled with darkness versus a room that's filled with light? Is there any change to the room itself? Whether the light is on or off in the room, the furniture remains the same. The layout of the room, the placement of the door, and the height of the ceiling are a constant. What then is the difference between the light being on or off in my room? It's just my perception, my ability to identify and see the reality, the truth, and that which was right before me all along. Hanukkah is about seeing things, people, and ideas, and miracles that are really right in front of us, even though we may not be able to visibly see them. George Orwell once wrote, quote, "To see what is in front of one's nose needs a constant struggle," unquote. One can live with their eyes open, perfect vision, and the light on, and still be cloaked in darkness. On the other hand, it can be pitch black all around, and yet a person can see with complete clarity. The Chash Monaim did not see their few numbers, weak army, and impossible task. They saw the mighty hand of God. They saw the obligation to fight, and they saw divine protection that would accompany them. Hanukkah is about lighting the candles and using them to harness our sight, not ophthalmologically speaking, but our deep vision of what is true, precious, and dear. When we look at our spouses and children, do we see the amazing blessing of their presence in our lives? Or do we hear lots of noise, see rooms that need to be cleaned up and a messy house? When we face a challenge, do we see no way out or an opportunity to further lean on our Creator? There are truths all around us. It's up to us to decide what to look at and how to see. Lighting candles in Bergen-Belsen. In her Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, Professor Yaffa Eliak shares the incredible story of Hanukkah in Bergen-Belsen. Hanukkah came to Bergen-Belsen. It was time to light the Hanukkah lights. A jug of oil was not to be found. There was no candle in sight, and a menorah belonged to the distant past. Instead, a wooden clog, the shoe of one of the inmates, became a menorah. Strings pulled from a concentration camp uniform became a wick, and the black camp shoe polish became the pure oil. Not far from the heaps of bodies, the living skeletons assembled to participate in the kindling of the Hanukkah lights. The rabbi lit the first light and chanted the first two blessings in his pleasant voice, and that festive melody was filled with sorrow and pain. When he was about to recite the third blessing, he stopped, turned his head, and looked around as if he were searching for something. But immediately, he turned his face back to the quivering small lights, and in a strong, reassuring, comforting voice, chanted the third blessing. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has kept us alive and has preserved us and enabled us to reach this season. Among the people present at the kindling of the light was a Mr. Zamechkowski, one of the leaders of the Warsaw Bund. He was a clever, sincere person with a passion for discussing matters of religion, faith, and truth. As soon as the rabbi of Bluzovs had finished the ceremony of kindling the lights, Zamechkowski elbowed his way to the rabbi and said, "You are a clever and honest person. I can understand your need to light Hanukkah candles in these wretched times. I can even understand the historical note of the second blessing, who wrought miracles for our fathers in days of old at this season. But the fact that you recited the third blessing is beyond me. How can you thank God and say, 'Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has kept us alive and has preserved us and enabled us to reach this season?' How could you say it when hundreds of dead Jewish bodies are literally lying within the shadows of the Hanukkah lights, when thousands of living Jewish skeletons are walking around in this camp and millions more are being massacred? For this you are thankful to God? For this you praise the Lord? This you call keeping us alive?" The rabbi answered, "You are 100% right. When I reached the third blessing, I also hesitated and asked myself, 'What should I do with this blessing?' I turned my head in order to ask the rabbi of Zainer and other distinguished rabbis who were standing near me if indeed I might recite the blessing. But just as I was turning my head, I noticed that behind me was a throng standing, a large crowd of living Jews, their faces expressing faith, devotion, and deliberation as they were listening to the rite of the kindling of the Hanukkah lights. I said to myself, 'If God has such a nation that at times like these, when during the lighting of Hanukkah lights they see in front of them the heaps of bodies of their beloved fathers, brothers, and sons, and death is looking from every corner. If despite all that, they stand in throngs and with devotion listen to the Hanukkah blessing, who performed miracles for our fathers in days of old at this season? Indeed, I was blessed to see such a people with so much faith and fervor. Then I am under a special obligation to recite that third blessing." That night in Bergen-Belsen, Mr. Zamechkowski only saw what lay before him: dead bodies and terrible suffering. The Reb also looked, but he saw another layer of truth that was equally accurate: that there was a gathering of people who maintained incredible faith despite the most horrific circumstances. Now, as we celebrate Hanukkah, let us remember that there are truths all around us, not visible to the naked eye. Let us use the light of the Hanukkah candles to inspire us to see the truth with clarity and 2020 vision. Thank you.
we are, we that we have light so that we can see. Although the day is done, what a miracle that a spark lifts these candles out of the dark. Every evening, one by one, until the end of Hanukkah, of Hanukkah. With the jingle bells and the toys and the TV shows and the noise, it's easy to forget. At the end of the day, our whole family will say these words for Hanukkah. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu, Melech haolam, Asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav itzivanu, Lahadlik ner shel Hanukkah. We light the candles for Hanukkah, for Hanukkah. We remember how Maccabees fought so all of us could be free, and so we celebrate on this festival of the lights. There's a joyful time every night when we illuminate the candles of Hanukkah, of Hanukkah. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, she'asa nisim labo.
And now we have a poem. This was written by Emma Lazarus, 1849 to 1887. And this poem is called The Feast of Lights. Kindle the taper like the steadfast star ablaze on evening's forehead o'er the earth, and add each night a luster till afar an eightfold splendor shine above thy hearth. Clash, Israel, the cymbals, touch the lyre. Blow the brass trumpet and the harsh-tongued horn. Chant psalms of victory till the heart takes fire. The Maccabean spirit leap newborn. Remember how from wintry dawn till night such songs were sung in Zion, when again on the high altar flamed the sacred light, and, purified from every Syrian stain, the foam-white walls with golden shields were hung, with crowns and silken spoils, and at the shrine stood midst their conqueror tribe five chieftains sprung from one heroic stock, one seed divine. Five branches grown from Mattathias' stem, the blessed John, the keen-eyed Jonathan, Simon the Fair, the burst of spring, the gem, Eleazar, help of God. O'er all his clan, Judas the Lion Prince, the avenging rod, towered in warrior beauty, uncrowned king, armed with the breastplate and the sword of God, whose praise is, "He received the perishing." They who had camped within the mountain pass, couched on the rock and tented neath the sky, who saw from Mitzpah's heights the tangled grass, choke the wide temple courts the altar lie, disfigured and polluted, who had flung their faces on the stones and mourned aloud and rent their garments, wailing with one tongue, crushed as a wind-swept bed of reeds is bowed. Even they, by one voice fired, one heart of flame, though broken reeds had risen and were men, they rushed upon the spoiler and overcame. Each arm for freedom had the strength of 10. Now is their mourning into dancing turned, their sackcloth doffed for garments of delight. Week long the festive torches shall be burned, music and revelry wed day with night. Still ours the dance, the feast, the glorious psalm, the mystic lights of emblem and the word. Where is our Judas? Where our five-branched palm? Where are the lion warriors of the Lord? Clash, Israel, the cymbals, touch the lyre, sound the brass trumpet and the harsh-tongued horn. Chant hymns of victory till the heart take fire. The Maccabean spirit leap newborn. We hope you've enjoyed the last hour in celebration of the Festival of Lights, Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah to all. And now we'll round out our show with a classic from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
A candle on a menorah, the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah. Light a candle for decency. Light a candle for hope. Light a universal candle for peace. Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks to their light it didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured when their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand.
Light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. For so many years, don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears.
Light one candle for the strength that we need to never become our own foe.
And light one candle for those who are suffering pain we learned so long ago.
Light one candle for all we believe in. Let anger not tear us apart.
Light one candle to bind us together with peace as a song in our heart.
For so many years, don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears. Don't let the light go out. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears.
And what is magic is so big.